Hello everybody again, and we're continuing with a treatise on cosmic fire, video commentary. This is number 12. It's going to be a shorter program because we are now completing the introduction to this book. I hope so anyway. We've been speaking about the way that humanity is the intermediary between a triplicity above and a triplicity below, and the different ways that can be looked at. You know, there are three great creative hierarchies above, the human monadic hierarchy, and three below. And there are also three planes above, and three planes below, three kingdoms above. The kingdoms above will be the kingdom of souls, the kingdom of planetary lives, and the kingdom of solar lives, and below, the animal kingdom, the vegetable kingdom, the mineral kingdom. This is not counting certain very subtle stops of the monad along the way on its involutionary arc. There are groups of elemental essences on the way to the mineral kingdom. But the Tibetan has talked about the three above in quite a different way, which is really worth noting. He's talked about the spiritual hierarchy of our planet, nature spirits or angels and human spirits who stand at a peculiar point on the ladder of evolution. Sanat Kumara is the highest, and the initiate of the first degree the lowest. Then he's spoken of the hierarchy of rays. Does he mean those within Shambhala, or those that are part of the solar system and have their representatives within Shambhala, but are basically ray lords? And then a hierarchy of lives gathered out of the earth and other four other planets, making five in all. So I find, at least at my present stage of understanding, a little bit of obscurity concerning these three, but let's see if that will clarify when we're dealing with the kingdoms or with the groups below for which humanity as a whole is an intermediary. Excuse me. All right, so let's move on. Page 48. The great symbol of the soul in man is his vital or etheric body, and for the following reasons. Now, this does not mean that the soul is not connected intimately with the astral body. It's often mentioned that way, that the monad is connected with the mind, the soul with the astral body, and the personality with the dense physical body. But this is a different type of assignment. So the vital or etheric body is considered to be the symbol of the soul. Well, certainly it is a kind of a connector. Number one, it is the physical correspondence to the inner light body we call the soul body, the spiritual body. And what is that? Also known as the causal body. Okay. It is called the golden bowl in the Bible and is distinguished by its light quality. And this is interesting. I suppose its light quality might be a ray correspondence, possibly, as the different colors are qualities of white light. That's a possibility anyway. Then B, its rate of vibration, which synchronizes always with the development of the soul. And that's very important. So when we're looking at the development of an etheric body, the greater the rate of vibration, eventually measurable, but probably not now. the greater the soul development. So that's something to keep in mind. And its coherent force, linking and connecting every part of the body structure, just as the presumably the soul, soul links all aspects of the personality. And in a way, is the linking mechanism between the higher aspects of man and the lower. Okay, so the great symbol of the soul of man is his vital body. Now we're saying, you know, why is the soul, the vital body, the great symbol of the soul in man? Why? Okay. All right, further then. It is the microcosmic web of life, or underlies every part of the physical structure. The macrocosmic web of life, well, is the universal etheric body. But there are many lesser macrocosms in which man lives and moves and has his being, and even the planetary etheric body would be one of them, and certainly the solar systemic etheric body can be considered a macrocosmic web of life. Okay, let's put in there web of life. Seems to be my day for abbreviations. Web of life. Maybe it's because the moon is in Taurus. I feel a little slowed down today. There is a certain factor of inertia that operates when the moon is in Taurus. And the last few days, when I seem to have accomplished six of these programs, the moon was in Aries. Well, one more little proof to me. The solar systemic etheric body can be considered a macrocosmic web of life, and there are many others. And there are many others rising in hierarchical form. All right, then the divisions. It's the microcosmic web of life. First the microcosmic web of life. And has three purposes. All right, let's look at those. To carry throughout the body the life principle, the energy which produces activity. We often call this the factor. Whenever I take another, I have to get that. The factor of vitality. This it does through the medium of the blood, for the blood is the life, the blood carries the vitality. The blood is the life, the blood carries vitality. And the focal point for this distribution is the heart. It is the conveyor of physical vitality along in cooperation with the spleen, the center above the diaphragm, and the lung center, or the vital pranic center between the shoulder blades. Okay, that's called the pranic triangle, but the heart is the main distributor. So why is it the three purposes of this microcosmic web of life? To enable the soul, or human yet spiritual man, to be en rapport with his environment. This is carried forward through the medium of the entire nervous system, the agent of rapport, and the focal point of that activity is the brain. So we have the factor of consciousness operating through the brain. This is the seat of conscious receptivity, and I suppose of conscious, the seat of conscious direction. Of the mechanism in the cerebrospinal nervous system. And so what is the third purpose? To produce eventually through life and consciousness a radiant activity or manifestation of glory which will make of each human being a center of activity for the distribution of light and attractive energy to others in the human kingdom and through the human kingdom to the sub-human kingdoms. This sounds like the initiated state. And certainly that of a master, but perhaps even of a third or fourth fourth degree initiate. This is a part of the plan of the planetary logos for the vitalizing and renewing of the vibration of those forms which we designate as subhuman and which have been inherited from a previous system and need irradiation. All right. So, it's the microcosmic web of life, and the three purposes to carry the life principle throughout the dense physical body. The second idea, to enable the soul to be en rapport. So this is kind of a second ray factor, maybe. And to produce eventually the radiant activity or manifestation of glory, which are these states are associated with sainthood, with initiated life, with mastership, and with true initiation, let's just say, from the third degree on. And certainly by the time we're a master, we have this kind of manifested glory. You know, sometimes we see it is depicted that a halo is existing around one of high spiritual development. This is the manifested glory here indicated when Christ took his disciples into the desert and was glorified before them. He was transfigured before them. It was a reenactment of this radiatory activity, this manifestation of glory. I guess he had that under his control. Being a fifth degree initiate, working through the body of a third degree initiate, he could do this at will. All right, so, and this irradiation is part of upliftment. This irradiation is part of the plan to uplift matter, which was conditioned in a previous solar system and which is not naturally radiant, but will be under this influence. This now we'll go on, and it's the great symbol of the soul in man. I'm going to emphasize that so that one continues to know what one is talking about. All right. Right, here we go. For the following reasons. Okay. It's called the Golden Bowl. It's the correspondence, physical correspondence to the inner light body. Now remember, the etheric body is physical. it's on the it's on the systemic physical plane. Number two, it's the microcosmic web of life, and it has the purposes we've just reviewed. And then this microcosmic symbol of the soul not only underlies the entire physical structure, and thus is the symbol of the anima mundi, or the world soul, but is indivisible, coherent, and a unified entity, thereby symbolizing the unity and homogeneity of God. Okay. So, a unified entity. And we know that God is one, or the great beings are one with all they include in their ring pass knot. So there's a flow here, you know, really. There's an inter-flow and no barriers which cannot be overcome. Perhaps there are tendencies to connect that are activated or not activated. There are no separated organisms in it, in the etheric body. But it is simply a body of freely flowing force. That force being a blend or a unification of two types of energy in varying quantities, dynamic energy and attractive or magnetic energy. We might say, the energy of either the first ray or the second, dynamic or attractive, respectively. These two types characterize the universal soul likewise, the force of will and of love, or of Atma and of Buddhi. And sometimes the monad itself is called Atma Buddhi. And it is the play of these two forces on matter that attracts to the etheric body all forms of the needed physical body, needed physical atoms, and that, having so attracted them by the will force, drives them into certain activities. In other words, this tells us how dense physical forms are created through the power of magnetism. The densest being attracted to the etheric. Okay, so it's a symbol of the anima mundi, and then we assume that there's a free flow of energy and consciousness within the anima mundi as well, since its symbol lacks any form of real separation. We call it a body of freely flowing force. I'll make that a little bigger because it's important. All right. This, now, what are we doing? Always have to remind ourselves what we're doing. Why is it the great symbol of the soul in man? That's what we are dealing with at this point. Okay, why? And going on further. This coherent, unified body of light and energy is the symbol of the soul in that it has within it several focal points wherein the condensation, if it must be so called, of the two blended energies are intensified. And so this must also be true of the soul in man and the soul in larger entities. These correspond to the seven focal points in the solar system, wherein the solar logos through the seven planetary logoi focuses his energies. He uses seven planetary logoi. Presumably, these are the sacred planets. This will be later elaborated. The point to be noted here is the symbolic nature of the etheric or vital body, for it is by understanding the nature of the energies displayed and the unified nature of the form and work that some idea will be had as to the work of the soul, the middle principle in nature, so that some idea about the work of the soul can be grasped. So there are in the, I guess we're saying that within the soul body, there are points of condensation of various types of force. Head and heart especially, perhaps, maybe the jewel in the lotus, perhaps when we're dealing with the vehicle of the soul on the higher mental plane, the jewel in the lotus and the petal structure. Maybe those are the two major points of condensation, the jewel in the lotus being generically more related to the monad in the first ray and the petal structure more related to the soul itself and the second ray. And of course, there are there's also the atomic triangle, but we're not dealing with that right now. It is found at the base of the egoic lotus. So maybe the Tibetan doesn't want to use that word condensation. He says if it must be so called, of the two blended energies. All right. So the soul has apparently these points of condensation as well as the etheric body. We can identify different points, not in the consciousness of the soul, but in the soul body per se. And the different tiers of petals are, in a way, areas of condensation of force, and the different petals themselves. And, of course, the atomic triangle related more to the third aspect. And the jewel and the lotus is a definite point of condensation for will energy. And in the etheric body, you know, you'll have the head center and the heart center and other centers which are points of condensation, some of them for the will and love energy, and others for modifications of those energies with other qualities. All right, so what are we doing? I always have to ask myself that. Why is it the great symbol of the soul in man? The symbolism is also carried forward when one remembers that the etheric body links the purely physical or dense body with the purely subtle, the astral or emotional body. You know, this is the intermediary between the purely dense body and the purely subtle body, as it is called. The mental body and the astral body and the mental body are called subtle bodies. In this is seen the reflection of the soul in man, which links the three worlds corresponding to the solid, liquid, and gaseous aspects of the strictly physical body of man to the higher planes of the solar system, linking thus the mental to the buddhic and the mind to the intuitional states of consciousness. The reflection of the soul in man, which links the three worlds, okay, the three worlds, lower mental anyway, astral and etheric physical, corresponding as they do to the solid, liquid, and gaseous states, you know, the solid state, the solid subplane, corresponds to the entire systemic etheric physical plane. The liquid subplane, it's the next to the lowest, corresponds to the astral body, and the gaseous subplane, three subplanes from below, corresponds to the mental body. So the soul itself links the three worlds to the higher planes in the solar system, linking thus the mental, the lower mental especially, to the buddhic and the mind in general, to the intuitional states of consciousness. So we might say, and we realize it to be true, that immediately above the soul body, or causal body, or egoic lotus, is to be found the cosmic subplane we call intuitional, which is the Buddhic plane. Intuitional. Right, okay. Well, it's a good thing too, because my italicization stops here, I think. I think so. We'll see for sure. What I've been doing is going into the book, in the Alice Bailey CD-ROM, the italicization exists, but not when you transfer via cut and paste to a Word document, which you can manipulate, which you cannot do when you're dealing with when you're dealing with the original CD-ROM text. It won't let you do anything, wisely so, at least with the original. So, all right, now we have made our way, and it has taken 11 and a half programs, roughly, of about an hour each, to go through this introduction, which has about 50 pages. So, this will be then the end. And I know it's a little early, but I think it's best to do it that way. Treatise on White Magic, video commentary, number 12, from page 48 to 50. And the beginning of Treatise on White Magic video commentary, number 13, as we, beginning on page 51. So really this goes as far as 51, doesn't it? Okay. Well, it has been an intricate adventure, but I'm impressed, as I have worked through this, by the fact that DK has offered in this introduction some extremely foundational material that we have to have in our minds if we're going to be able to be white magicians. And I can't remember anywhere in the teaching where he's so meticulously describes many angles of the soul, of the spirit soul, and even the personal nature. Maybe in the personal nature he elaborates quite a bit elsewhere, but not so much for soul and spirit. And here he takes the anatomy of man, and the inner and outer anatomy, and subjects it to numerological division into triplicities, some dualities, an occasional fivefold division, and we find the same area of the human form anatomically considered switching or assigned to different ray qualities depending upon the combination in which it is found. So this gives us a certain flexibility of mind, a certain relativity in our consideration, and we begin to know how to assign the divine aspects to, how to assign the divine aspects to different divisions, different anatomical, numerical anatomical divisions within the vehicle or dense physical vehicle or even within the etheric body. There are all these triangles, you know, there are triplicities, but there are other kinds of aggregations as well. You know, triplicity may be the most prominently found, but there are many dualities, you know, above the diaphragm, below the diaphragm, and also larger aggregations, you know, fours and threes, threes and fours considered together. And we begin to know which divine aspects relate to the various members of these numerical aggregations. So it's only by really studying what is brought forward here that we will gain a solid understanding of the somewhat mathematical or even geometrical structure of the way creation, and especially the creation of the human being, is organized. And it is foundational to the study of white magic, and that's where we have arrived. We have arrived at rule one in the study of white magic, and so rather than just jump into this, I'll try to keep the different programs distinct so that each rule will have its series of programs, even if I end up with a relatively short program at the end of each chapter. There's no way to predict it. Some chapters have many, many tens of pages. If we go to the chapter on astrology, is it the rule 10? It's long, and there'll be, you know, many, many programs will be part of that. So, okay, look, thank you for participating here, and when I have a chance, and I hope it's soon, I will plunge ahead into these rules for magic, remembering that some of the key activating dynamic mantra, or maybe all of them, have been withheld. As DK says, study it academically now and later when I'm in a position to give you the activating words of power. These are my words, but his idea. Then you'll be in a position to move much more quickly and with understanding because of your previous academic study. And I think the bestowal of those words of power will not happen immediately. Remember, these books are meant right now for the general public, and such activating words cannot be given willy-nilly to everyone. They have to be guarded because the user of those words can do harm to himself and to others unless well prepared and only under the supervision of an initiate teacher, a master, can it be determined whether the individual truly is sufficiently prepared to accept and utilize these activating words of power. Okay, friends, I'm impressed by the thought that only careful study will allow for the assimilation. Right now, we're sort of going through the text. I'm giving you the associations which come to my mind and some links to various aspects of the teaching, which might not be found in this particular book, but, you know, it's my attempt to link up the whole teaching as one field of knowledge. But obviously, it's just a drop in the bucket, and anything that we can really produce concerning our own understanding of these matters is just a drop in the bucket compared to the knowledge of the teacher who has given them forth. But we have to accept that. That's how it is now. And we're on our way to the kind of intelligent grasp of the ageless wisdom, followed hopefully by the growth of wisdom after the knowledge that will make of us better cooperators for the upliftment of humanity and in cooperation with hierarchy. Okay, then, on to number 13, when the moment presents. See you then.